Next, we're going to hear from Dr. David Baker. He is the Vice President of the Health Research Practice at Impact International. At Impact, he leads an ongoing work related to improving quality of care and evaluating the impact of QI interventions. Previously, he held positions as Director of the Health Services Research Institute within Quality Integration and Improvement at the Carilion Clinic, and as an associate professor on the founding faculty for the Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine and with the American Institutes for Research, or AIR. At AIR, he served also as the project director for all of AIR's Team Steps projects, which include the national implementation of Team Steps, the program evaluation of medical team training in the Department of Defense, development and testing of a rapid response team training module within Team Steps curriculum, support of the DoD Healthcare Team Coordination Program to evaluate Team Steps, and finally, the Team Steps Collaborative. The purpose of those efforts is to transition the most current research findings on T performance into evidence-based tools that promote better teamwork in military treatment facilities and in healthcare in general. Dr. Baker received his PhD in industrial psychology from the University of Florida. And the topic of his talk is Partnership for Patients, Lessons from the National Implementation of Team Steps.
So I'm going to take a little bit different approach, and what I'm going to do is talk to you today a little bit about my perspective from leading the national implementation of Team Steps for a number of years, and really think about this in the context, if you will, having worked with Jim over that time, Caroline and others, about the whole notion of what it takes to create these boots on the ground and how, what can we learn from that initiative that would generalize the partnership for patients. So I'm not going to go back over the goals. I think everybody should know the goals at this point. If we have a test at the end, this is the one question we would hope you would get right about the partnership for patients. But let me talk to you a little bit, and you've heard a little bit about how this is organized. And this is a slide that actually was part of a presentation that was done for the health hospital engagement contractors. And the basic idea behind the Partnership for Patients strategy is that there is a national content developer. And under that contract, you're actually housing all the resources and the materials and all the expertise that would be useful, okay, to make change. They're going to organize what are called training support packages, and those resources would then be available to these hospital engagement contractors. They're like the nodes. They're the preliminary boots on the ground. That's where the training, the engagement, the deployment's going to occur of the materials. There's two other tangential pieces, not tangential, but other pieces that are relevant, but not in the direct line of the content developer, and that's the advanced participant networks and the patient and provider engagement contracts. And those will also be resources for creating this mass deployment of these tools to address these hacks. Okay, so it's very much a train-the-trainer model in terms of resources of the content developer, training the engagement contractors, deploying that to the hospitals and the like. So the content developer, really what they're going to help with is determining needs or examining what the current baselines are for needs related to addressing the hacks through these organizational effectiveness tools, and then deploy through identification and organization these training support packages, which will be made available to the hacks, and then help develop infrastructure around that with meetings among the hospital engagement contractors, creating some sort of web system, web portal to allow people to exchange information and share and create collaboratives. So the HECs are really the first level of the boots on the ground. They're going to conduct the training, addressing the specific hacks that they've targeted. They'll provide technical assistance and establish ways to monitor and determine how improvement is actually made. Now, this strategy is very similar to what was done in the national deployment of Team Steps. You've already know now what Team Steps is. It's an ARC toolkit. It stands for Team Strategies and Tools to Enhance Performance and Patient Safety. In 2007, we actually launched the national deployment. The idea behind that program is we used a train-the-trainer approach. Caroline mentioned coming to Roanoke. We set up what were called training resource centers at a number of what we would call exemplary Team Steps users at the time, Carilion Clinic in Roanoke, where I was located at the time, Duke University Medical Center, Creighton University Medical Center, University of Minnesota, University of Washington. I think that's all of them. I may have missed one. And the idea was that people would come, like HHC, to a training center and learn about Team Steps and spend time thinking about how to deploy that within their system. They would then go back to their system and implement at the system level, as Caroline just showed you. So here's some basic idea. What we tried to do is at two levels, have the TRCs and to create our next level of boots on the ground. We had hospitals like HHC that would provide a direct training and there was implementation. And then the other level of this was the QIOs, the quality improvement organizations. ARC actually was able to work with the QIOs at that time and incorporate a requirement for all QIOs to send people to become Team Steps master trainers through the 9th scope of work. So we actually trained individuals from every single QIO in the country. I think there's 39 total, but they actually represent the 50 states, and they send on average 3 to 5 people to be trained. And then as part of their QIO contract under the 9th scope, they were actually supposed to use Team Steps to address MRSA, but they did all sorts of things with the curriculum. So they were really the boots on the ground, kind of following along this agricultural extension model that Jim has talked about before as a way to deploy these types of initiatives. So to give you a quick comparison, you can see the similarities between Team Steps and the Partnership for Patients, right? The partnership's about preventable harm. Team Steps is about improving patient safety. Both really have a train-the-trainer approach. On the one hand, with the partnership, you're deploying through the HEX. On the other hand, your Team Steps, you're deploying through the TRCs and the QIOs. National outreach, national deployment. The idea is to make a change and make it stick. The bigger difference, I think, with the partnership is there's going to be a real effort to track those outcomes to see that those targets are achieved in terms of the 40% reduction and the 20% reduction. We've done follow-up on the Team Steps work, but we kind of took the approach that we would bring them into training, we knew that they left trained and knew what they were supposed to do, and we crossed their fingers that they would do something good with the materials like HHC did. So a couple of insights that we've learned from Team Steps that I think relates to the partnership and where some of the challenging aspects are of this work. And I've highlighted 5 here. So the first, there's no prescription, right? There's no real firm, fixed, fast way of set of rules that we've taught people how to do this. We've had all sorts of people come to training at this point, hundreds of hospitals, thousands of people, and what we've determined is there's no specific formula for success. What works at HHC may not work at Long Island Jewish, which may not work at Roanoke, which may not work somewhere else. So it's very, very hard to determine exactly what the best approach is and tell somebody, do these 10 things in a row and this will make the change that you want. I think most of us at this point know what the core components of change are, right? Defining needs, leadership engagement should probably be in there, implement, measure, adjust your plan. And people know what those are. They're masked now in a variety of different initiatives in terms of CUSP or DMAIC or all these different models of doing it. But the core strategies are very, very defined at this point. And there is some data now to suggest, especially in the CUSP initiative, that that might be the best approach. But it's still, we don't have a prescription. If you want to address this hack, do these 10 things specifically, though it is emerging. So one of the big things that the partnership will have to figure out is how to guide the participants in terms of which training support packages work and how to make them work. Just because it worked in one scenario doesn't mean it's going to automatically transfer, and that'll be a real challenge. And then whether or not these are customizable, under Team Steps, we've let it be customizable. You can take it back, you can adjust it, you can do whatever you want with it versus standardized that you have to do it in this particular way. The second thing is it's the transfer that's really the tough part. And it was nice that Caroline showed some transfer information in terms of how this has impacted their work at HHC. It's very easy to show slides about how many people have been changed, but it's much harder to show slides about what the impact actually was. And the interesting thing about this work, which has really changed over the 3 years from when HHC came to Roanoke, is people really now know what to do. People know these tools. They know what to do with respect to QI. The education level has improved greatly. They think it's a good idea, but they don't always do it, right? Think about hand washing compliance. I think you'd be hard pressed that people don't know how to wash their hands and don't think it's a good idea, but they still don't do it. So the tricky part is this aspect of how do we make change and how do we make it stick? And that's where the education really needs to focus on. Bottom line is the effects of training are really easy to overcome. Okay. So additionally, I think one of the things that hasn't been listed up here in terms of the partnership where we have to have a lot of focus, and they are two issues that all the HEC contractors are addressing, are the leadership aspect and how do we get that leadership engagement and alignment in the system, and then that cultural aspect, which is this fuzzy thing that everybody knows is important, but it's really hard to define and figure out how to change. And those are going to be critical to get the behaviors that we want to transfer onto the job. If transfer is tough, sustainment is even tougher. So one of the studies that was done early on the team steps by the University of Central Florida found that the team step skills were only sustained in the surgery group for a couple of months. And I thought what was really interesting about that is they had observers collect the data watching surgery. So you knew that people were there observing your team step skills, and yet there wasn't even an observer effect after 6 months. Okay. So sustainment is going to be a real challenge. We really don't know the skill decay rates of these things, and we don't really have good prescriptive, useful information at this point in terms of how to do refresher training. When should we do it? What should we consist of? And the like. So one of the big things that the PFP needs to do is think about sustainment. How do we sustain these systems? And how often and who and when do they need to be retrained? So the next one that I highlighted here is that level 4 results are hard to achieve. Under Kirkpatrick's model of training evaluation, there's 4 levels: reaction, learning, transfer, and outcomes. And so outcomes really are the hardest to achieve. I thought it was interesting that Caroline was able to show specific links to outcomes. There hasn't been a lot of that in the literature so far to show that QI programs impact clinical outcomes. And one of the reasons for that is the fact of the matter is, even though these hacks or this harm to patient is really important, it doesn't happen that often, right? So we still have a relatively infrequent event that's serious, which creates a statistical problem more than anything in terms of a base rate challenge. So in my own research, we found some links between team steps and process measures and trauma, looking at things like speed at which the trauma team worked, so the time to which somebody was intubated, if they needed to be intubated, but we couldn't find data to link that to things like length of stay or complication rate and the like. That being said, data are emerging. I mean, we have more and more data in the public domain. One of the real encouraging things is this CUSP-CLAPSI project, which showed a direct link of the implementation of CUSP across a nation to CLAPSI rates in these states. So I think there is a lot of positive work going on there to show that link. Final thing, I think, is alignment is key. I mean, one of the tricky parts in managing all this, especially in QI, is we're introducing new alternative strategies to address the same problem, and it's very hard to align the QI state. So it's a new program. It's the thing of the month. It's something new, and we need to figure out how to fit things in with what's already going on with respect to quality improvement. The pieces need to fit together. And the pieces in the system, whether that's event reporting, event analysis, other factors around your quality improvement effort need to align and be integrated, so it makes a seamless whole instead of a bunch of separate initiatives. And so one of the things I think, given the scope and the breadth and the potential impact that the PFP has, is there's a tremendous opportunity to think about how to align these pieces. What works best? How does it need to be organized? How does it need to be implemented? What other factors does it need to be considered? I will stop there.